In this episode of Keeb FM, I'm joined by Fernando Duran, who's a founder of SAD Servers and a former DevOps manager responsible for operating Kubernetes clusters under real cost and reliability constraints. This conversation focuses on the practical realities of running Kubernetes at scale, especially around cost, control, and operational trade-offs. We dig into Fernando's experience with GKE Autopilot, including how the billing model actually behaves in production, impact of system overhead like balloon pods, and why expected efficiency gains don't always materialize. From there, we compare managed cloud Kubernetes with a more hands-on approach using Hetzner, discussing workload placement, node sizing, operational responsibility, and where the break-even points really are. If you're making decisions about managed Kubernetes versus self-managed clusters, or trying to understand where your Kubernetes costs are really coming from, this episode is a grounded, experience-based discussion you'll want to hear. This episode of Keeb FM is sponsored by LearnCube. Since 2017, LearnCube has helped Kubernetes engineers from all over the world level up through training courses. Courses are instructor-led and are given in-person and online. They are 60% practical and 40% theoretical. They're given to individuals as well as to groups, and students have access to the course materials for the rest of their lives. For more information, go to learncube.com. Now, let's get into the episode with Fernando.
You're tuned in to Keeb FM.
Fernando, welcome to Keeb FM. What are three emerging Kubernetes tools that you are keeping an eye on?
Well, mostly now, because I'm working on a project with AI chatbot, where I'm looking at Kubernetes tools that they interact, that they use LLMs, like AI agents, to try and figure out SRE stuff, like what problems are in the system.
And for people who don't know you, Fernando, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and where you work?
Yeah, so I'm the founder of SAD Servers. SAD Servers is a platform that gives you Linux and DevOps problems and that you have to solve in a practical way.
Okay. And how did you get into cloud native?
Yeah, so first I got into cloud a few years after AWS was created. And then in one of the startups I worked for, I was the DevOps manager and we did a proof of concept of Kubernetes. So we introduced it to the company as a way to move our platform towards it. And then my next startup, it was fully 100% running on Kubernetes. And I was also DevOps manager there. So that was my full-on introduction to Kubernetes.
And what were you before cloud native? I know you mentioned getting started with AWS, but prior to that?
Yeah, so I'm old, so I've done pretty much everything, I think. So I started as a software engineer. And then after that, I got into the DevOps side, like infrastructure and starting with Linux sysadmin. I worked in startups and then it was more like DevOps. So that was pretty much my travel was like coming from software engineering and then sysadmin and then DevOps, I would say.
Okay. And the Kubernetes and cloud native ecosystem moves very quickly. How do you stay updated, you know, on top of all the things that are going on?
Yeah, I don't, it has to be rather than me pulling, it has to be more of a push from the outside in the form of like something that shows up really in one of my feeds or in Hacker News or some of the groups that I have like friends and we have like we chat among each other like DevOps group. So it has to be something that is affecting the community and goes above a threshold, and then that's how I learn about it. But unless it's something that I need to work on, like I mentioned at the beginning, something related to solving SRE problems with AI agents, or a direct problem that I have, then I cannot keep, you know, unfortunately, I cannot keep in touch with everything that's going on.
That's a common challenge. And if you could go back in time and share one career tip with your younger self, what would it be?
Yeah, in general, I would say that a big part of a job, in any job, not only like technical job, is to say that you're going to do something, to do it, and then say that you've done something. That seems like a very simple thing, but it's a good professional tip. And with dealing with like contractors or any job really in the world, sometimes people don't do that, and it just bothers me.
Fair point. Now, you know, as part of our monthly content discovery, we found an article that you wrote titled "Migrating Kubernetes Out of the Big Cloud Providers." So you recently wrote about migrating your Kubernetes workloads away from the major cloud providers. What prompted you to explore alternatives to the big three, AWS, Google Cloud, and Azure?
Yeah, the easy answer is cost. Basically, it's like super expensive for me. I'm like a small startup, so cost is really important for me. And yeah, all the big three, they have kind of like a I would say like monopoly. Like they have like the same price for their control plane. Plus, they have a lot of hidden costs in terms of like monitoring and other costs. So for me, I was, I can explain. Yeah, basically the cost would be like the issue for me. I was like doing a proof of concept for a new product that I'm working on. And yeah, it was like really expensive for doing a proof of concept.
And, you know, Kubernetes was often promoted as a way to reduce infrastructure costs through efficient resource packing. In your experience running production workloads, has that promise held true?
No, actually, I don't know anybody. I mean, this is anecdotally from reading stuff, even if I just say that I don't read a lot of stuff unless it surfaces. But that hasn't been true in my experience. So with all the companies working on Kubernetes or people that I talk to that they manage Kubernetes clusters, basically the advantages are other ones, like having the same way of doing things. So when I move from one company to the other, using Kubernetes, for me, the on-ramp, like the onboarding was very easy. So standardization is very important. Also, the way to extend things is a good advantage. That's incidentally why I think WordPress, for instance, took over the blog and easy website world. The cost, we thought like bin packing was going to be a big thing, but it didn't live up to that promise in particular.
And you chose GKE Autopilot as your starting point. What made it attractive compared to standard GKE or other managed offerings?
Yeah, so in my first professional Kubernetes experience, we did different proof of concept with different, all the big three public clouds and Google, possibly or almost surely because of their Borg initial Kubernetes experience, was the easiest one to work with. Then I work in a startup that was fully 100% on GKE. But me working on DevOps, one of our biggest pain points was just managing the node pools. So GKE Autopilot, that now for a while has been the standard now for Google Cloud, so abstracts that out and it was easier. On the other hand, whenever you abstract something out, it hides a lot of things that you may want to have control of. But yeah, so it's a trade-off like everything. So I went with GKE Autopilot and then I learned some things I didn't know about it.
GKE Autopilot has a unique billing model based on pod requests rather than nodes. How did this affect your cost planning and what surprised you about it?
Yeah, so it was mostly like a me problem, not really fully reading the fan manual. But yeah, so it makes sense that it charges by what's requested. So it's the same as when you provision a VM and in AWS or whatever, you provision a VM based on CPU and memory, not on what you actually use. So that makes sense. But it has some things like there's some ratios of CPU to memory that are like minimum that you cannot change. So in my case, I was trying to use like super small pods with like very little CPU and then realizing that memory requirements were like minimum, things like that. So yeah, so basically, whenever you get into something new, especially if it's Kubernetes, which can things that are like automated for you, you have to be careful about all those hidden costs.
Beyond the billing model, what other hidden costs or surprises did you encounter with GKE Autopilot?
Yeah, so the data plane costing the same, funny enough, everywhere. That's like the easiest one that is like well known. But like the metrics, I got charged quite a bit for the metrics, and it's not easy to see which ones you were paying for. Like you would think like, oh, this is covered by like the basic logging and monitoring. But yeah, so that was like some logging and monitoring costs that was not initially you could think of. Also, there are some other costs as in the sense of like having pods just to keep a node alive, like these balloon pods that we can talk a bit later on. But yeah, other surprises are like I said, when you have like things that are like very automated for you, you have like some hidden things that you cannot control. So you get in Google Cloud like problems with like quota, and the quota like in AWS or Google Cloud, you can go, oh, I need to ask for like more VMs, but in GKE is kind of hidden, like you don't know because it's a startup for you, you don't know exactly what quota you're hitting there. And then also like the errors that you get in their main dashboard after you fix them, they don't go away, and then you realize they go away after a day or two. So I don't know if it was like a me case or just for me or less general, but that was my experience. So there are like some things that you need to learn, and because of the extraction.
I know you mentioned something about balloon pods in your GKE setup. For people who aren't aware of that, can you explain what those are and why they matter for costs?
Yeah, so what happens is like your default GKE setup, you have to use 4 availability zones. And that means at least 1 CPU each. And if you have less workload than that, what Google does is just have a pod doing nothing. So it's just you're paying for that one node, that 1 CPU, even if you're not using it, which in a way makes sense because, you know, they have to have a node up. But yeah, at the beginning, when you just read that, you're just paying for what you use or what you request, rather, it was a bit surprising. But yeah, you can get it instead of using the default. Then I learned that you can use actually the minimum is to have like 2 availability zones. So that's what I did and reduced the cost quite a bit. And that's for GKE Autopilot. I think for regular GKE, you can just have 1.
And what was the actual cost impact you experienced, and how did it compare to your expectations?
Yeah, so I was using, I believe, like the actual workload for the things I was running was just a proof of concept. So it was like something silly, like 0 to 0.2 CPUs. Plus I had some things like the certificate automation, like a certificate, but that I didn't look at, and then because of defaults it was using quite a bit of CPU. So basically for this proof of concept I was running quite close to like $1,000 per month. So yeah, you don't, as you're okay in a big company and yes, you are giving like free reign or doing things, that's why some costs they just run away. But then when it's just you and you have to take care of the cost, you can start reading the fine print and do this thing about like going from 4 CPUs to 2 CPUs using spot nodes, putting requests to all the pods that you're using, not using defaults. And then it went down to like a few hundred dollars a month. But I still, and this is answering more one of the initial questions, was looking for something that wasn't like really fully managed like GKE, but some happy middle that wasn't like fully managed, but it wasn't like me starting from like a bare metal VM and managing myself the full Kubernetes. Oh, that was what I was looking for.
Using spot instances is a common cost reduction strategy. What practical considerations should teams keep in mind when using them in Kubernetes?
Yeah, so I think this is an easy one. I mean, when you have workloads that can be interrupted at any time, then yeah, use Spot instances because they are way cheaper. Actually, there's an easy way in at least in GKE to set an alert, and I was getting an email every time the Spot instance, as in the work, it was being destroyed, and it seemed to be like quite random. Like some days I would get the Spot node being recreated like 2-3 times a day, and then it would stay there for like a couple of days. So yeah, if you can accept that level of I wouldn't say instability, because the workload has to be appropriate to that, then it's a no-brainer to use it in the right workloads.
If someone doesn't need the full ecosystem of a major cloud provider, what alternatives exist for running managed Kubernetes more affordably?
Yeah, so I mean, I didn't spend like a lot of time looking into that, but just in initial research, if you don't need to take advantage of like the full cloud infrastructure, like for instance, I just use Kubernetes clustering in one place, and then I use some of the like secrets manager or object storage from the cloud service, then you can go to a cheaper managed Kubernetes. So I look at, for instance, DigitalOcean. They seem slightly cheaper, although kind of like in the same range of price as the big four. OVH Cloud seems to be having like a free data plane, as well as other providers that I didn't try out. One called like Sibo or Kaibos, not how to pronounce that.
Sibo.
So Sibo, yeah. I never know how to pronounce the I's in English, but there are like I would say try different ones and see which ones they seem to have like the minimum reliability that you want and the minimum requirements for you. But for individuals or startups at the beginning that they're like very price sensitive, I think it's worth it to spend just a tiny bit of time trying on a couple of things and see which ones are right for them.
And you ultimately landed on a combination of Hetzner and Edka. What does each bring to the solution, and why this pairing specifically?
Yeah, so Hetzner is one of the big providers that are like very affordable, very cheap. And they have the basic minimum that you need for all stuff. So they have an API, so they have servers, they have load balancer, IPs, firewalls, even object storage. So you have like the basics if you just need like running workloads. The APIs, I think is especially like a big thing, and also even they have a Terraform provider. So Hetzner, similar in a way to OVH Cloud. So it seems like a good place if you need like the basic servers plus some of the minimum services. Now I wanted I found out about Edka. Also, it's a startup running off of Barcelona, Spain, which is also nice. And what they offer is, you know, like a control plane, like a managed Kubernetes on top of Hetzner, and they're specialized on Hetzner specifically. So that was a good selling point. So I tried them out and I'm very happy with them. And at the time when I signed up, I haven't looked recently, but you can have your first cluster for free. They start charging on the second one. So for me, it was like a very good thing to try out. Like I said, that gave me that happy medium that I was looking for of having a cheap underlying VMs like servers, and without me having to do all the work, and having some Kubernetes management without all the bells and whistles of like logging, monitoring, and things that I then have to do by myself, but they're like pretty standard.
And for teams out there that are considering a similar setup, can you walk through the specific infrastructure components and their costs?
Yeah, so for my POC that I was running, I was using a dedicated server for the master, which makes sense. And I think actually it requires, well, that's like $15 a month, so very cheap. And then I use a shared CPU worker, also in the $9-$10 a month. Volume is very cheap, so like half a dollar per month. Load balance is like $6. And then a few public IPs, that's like $2. So yeah, for $30 a month or so, it's like five times, that's the math I did at the time. I need to review that. So it's like five times, 100%, 500% cheaper than the Google Cloud GKE solution for the same capacity, nominal capacity.
And how did the setup process compare between GKE Autopilot and the Hetzner plus EDCA combination?
Yeah, the setup in both of them is completely automated. I mean, the difference is like the extra things that GKE gives you, that if you're okay with that, that's fine. In EDCA, I didn't have any problem, just reading through the documentation. There was a couple of very small things. I talked to the founder and they fixed it. So other than that, a small secondary thing, it was like pretty straightforward. So both of them.
And beyond cost, did you notice any difference in performance or operational characteristics between the two setups?
Yeah, so this is anecdotal from me, yes. You know, spinning up bots in both of them, looking at lens, how, but basically Hetzner seems like way faster than GKE. So again, this is anecdotal. I didn't do any benchmarks or anything, but just from like getting the command prompt back from pods and how fast they went up and everything, I didn't notice any issue. Yes, you know, because you went to the big cloud to like a more affordable option.
What other tools would you recommend teams look at for managing Kubernetes clusters on commodity infrastructure?
Yeah, so everything that whatever Kubernetes management tool is missing. So in the case of EDCA, it's the basic Kubernetes control plane. So it doesn't include like metrics and logins. So you have to add yourself your own Prometheus, Grafana, and Loki or whatever login system that you want for your applications. An open source or a tool for having a dashboard for Kubernetes. So Lens is the one that I use. I think it's a very popular one. You have to add your own observability stack, whatever that is, the one that you want, that you're more comfortable with. But once you add that, pretty much you are almost on par with a cloud solution. So I think it's very worth it to explore this option.
And Fernando, based on your migration experience, what advice would you give teams evaluating whether to move away from the big cloud-managed Kubernetes?
Yeah, so like any other abstraction tool, the trade-offs is between your team's time and whatever the tool that you're using, and abstracting out what's underneath is worth it. So yeah, if you can spare some engineering cycles to set up like your own observability, and cost is important for you, and you don't have to integrate tightly with a lot of things from the cloud provider, then looking at a solution like running on community hardware plus a tool for the Kubernetes control plane, it can be a solution for you.
Fernando, what's next for you?
Yeah, so besides keeping growing SAT servers, I'm working on a superset of SAT servers. So SAT servers runs on, you got the problem on a VM. So I'm working on, internally, I call it SAT SRE, which is a SRE simulator. So I'm working on the full-blown SRE simulator that, like superset of SaaS servers, like practical problems for SREs and DevOps.
And how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can send me an email at info@sadservers.com. Personally, I'm almost everywhere as F. Duran, as in LinkedIn, Twitter, what have you. So yeah, and I suppose I'm even fduran.com. So I should be easy to be found.
Great. Well, thanks so much for sharing your experience with us, Fernando. Look forward to speaking to you again in the future. Take care.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure.
You're tuned in to Cube FM.